Hi, this is Danielle from The Jazz Curator, and this is episode 92 of Art for Your Ear. That means 8 more episodes until 100. Now, last week I made an announcement that I was going to stop at 100, and a lot of you did not like that very much. So, let me clarify. I love this podcast, and I love putting art in your ear every weekend, so I don't want that part to end. I guess what I was questioning was, do I keep going in this format, or do I shake things up? Or do I just need to take July and August off and come back recharged with more artists lined up for September? I don't know. But either way, I am not leaving. Are you kidding? I am way too obsessed to just quit. Anyway, all of that to say, I promise that there will still be something artsy for your ear. I just am not totally sure what yet. It might just be the same thing, but I just want to take a tiny bit of time to figure it out. And I love hearing from you guys, so let me know what you think I should do. Okay, so moving on to this wonderful fact that episode 92 is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Visit their online gallery at saatchiart.com. Today I am talking to an artist about starting from square one after she had done all of the things she told herself she was supposed to do to get the life that she wanted. It's also about jellyfish alien creatures. Yes, American collage artist Jenny Brown is my guest today. She wrote a really heartfelt story on Facebook the other day, and I just knew I had to get the inside scoop. So, let's do that. Calling Jenny in Rhode Island. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Danielle.
How are you?
I'm great, great. I'm so excited to do this.
I know, me too. It's so weird because we're Facebook friends. I already feel like we've known each other for years and we've never actually talked.
I know. Virtual friends.
I know. So that's why today, I mean, I know about your art now, but just the other day, speaking of Facebook, you posted this really cool story, basically.
About
your life as an artist, and we have lots of mutual friends, so everybody was liking it and commenting on it, and I started to read it and I was like, no, I'm not gonna read it. I'm just gonna call her and see if she'll do the podcast, because you know, I wanted to be surprised,
right,
but then I read it.
Oh. That's okay.
I couldn't control myself, and so yeah, I want to talk all about that, and I think your story is so similar in a way to lots of people. And then
I'm not much of a writer, you know, I don't do a lot of writing, maybe for applications or grants or things like that, but I felt really compelled last week to write this, just because I felt like I was getting bombarded with questions and from every side, work side, art side, what are you doing, people telling me who I was, what I should be doing, and it was driving me nuts. So I was like, I need to take a time out and do this.
Wow, that's so funny that, yeah, just to get bombarded all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the universe trying to say?
I know, that's what I was thinking. And I thought, well, I mean, I could obviously turn to my work, like I do a lot of times, and immerse myself in that. But I felt really compelled because I started to feel bad as people were asking me all these questions. And I was like, wait a second, there isn't anything to feel bad about. And I know that there's a lot of people in similar situations. And then sometimes we just don't talk about all those other parts of being an artist, mm-hmm. And being an adult. And so that's why I was like, let's try writing. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll put it on Facebook and see what people say.
And how did it, what was the general, like, I didn't read everybody's comments. Was everybody just like, you go, girl?
Yeah. I mean, the response was completely overwhelming. I heard from people I haven't talked to in 20 years, probably, but you know, our Facebook friends, people that I work with at my day job came to talk to me about it. One woman started crying. I felt so bad, but she was like, you touched a nerve, like in a good way. But, so it's been really good. And it's led to other conversations with other artists who have the same sort of challenges, whether it be financially or, you know, trying to juggle these two different worlds. So it made me feel a lot better because I think, especially in the age of social media, I know a lot of people feel this way. You know, you look on social media and everybody's like having this fantastic day all the time.
Yeah.
they're in their studio and their studio is gorgeous and it's all great work. And then they're like going out for coffee and it's just like this wonderful flowing day. And my days are very rarely like that.
Yeah.
They're great.
As are theirs probably.
Right. And, you know, I'm now that I spend so much time, you know, promoting my work on social media, I know about, you know, all the curation of all this stuff, but sometimes it still can get you down, you know, when you, the repetitiveness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was great because it allowed me to connect with other people and.
Yeah. It sounds very cathartic.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and so I always say like, that's because social media does get slagged quite a bit, but I really like it because I live in a tiny town away from, you know, a lot of my friends are in Toronto and like all over the States now and stuff. And so it is this really nice place to reach out to like-minded people. You know, if you find those people, you know, and even if like when you were writing that, you kind of felt like you were just writing into a void and you weren't sure what was going to come back. Like all of a sudden it's like all these people that you're like, oh, like, you know, just to hear that you're not alone and that, you know,
exactly.
People get
and
it.
And it's like people that I've known and, you know in life, my virtual friends that I've developed a relationship with, and sort of all these people started contributing to it. And a couple of people asked me if they could share it on their blog. So it sort of has spread out a little bit. Which
yeah,
is
that's awesome. Yeah. And then now you're on here because I wanted it to spread to here too.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's go backwards and talk about what you were doing when you were a kid. If you always knew you were going to be an artist, or how, you know, what was it like as a kid?
So I was pretty sure I was going to be some kind of artist. I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Army, so we moved a lot. But they were very encouraging of me being interested in art and, you know, pursuing it in my spare time. My grandmother is a painter and an art teacher, so she was able to help me a lot, just with amazing little details. Like the best thing that she ever taught me was that when you draw a landscape, you don't just draw the sky at the top of the page, you draw it all the way down to where the mountains are. So like little details like that.
Yes.
I've carried around, but you know, you see a lot of kids. I mean, I used to do it. You just draw the sky at the top of the page. And so she would give me all these great tips like this and art supplies. And she was really into, well, now she's a hoarder. I can't say it's as fun, but she was an antiquer and, you know, a lover of paper ephemera and all this stuff. So that also started that whole piece. And my parents were pretty cool with it. I mean, I grew up in a very strict household. I mean, you know, my dad was in the Army, so
yeah.
We had a lot of rules. But, you know, when I decided that I was going to go to Bennington, which is where I went to college, which is very liberal and not a lot of structure, they were really cool with it. Like they didn't think it was weird at all, which is great.
Well, they probably knew that it would suit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
when you went there, did you go for painting? What were you thinking your major would be?
So I never really, you know, I did all the art classes in high school. I went to Bennington. I thought, okay, I'm going to be a painter because that's what everybody does.
That's what you do. Yeah.
That's what you do. You take painting. And amazingly, my very first painting teacher was Amy Silman. I don't know if you know her work.
No.
She's a painter and just amazing work on paper. And she was my intro to painting teacher, which is kind of amazing. So I got immersed in that. And because I had this love of collecting things, I had a tendency to just take the painting and then throw a bunch of stuff in it because I loved it. I mean, that's really what I was doing because I didn't really know what I was doing with it yet. And she was like, okay, that's cool. But, you know, maybe focus on one thing for right now and, you know, think about using it with purpose when it makes sense. And I hadn't really thought about it that way. I thought of it more just as a visual component, not as it making sense to the story of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was in school, we have to try everything, ceramic, sculpture. I was terrible. My ceramic skills were so bad. It was terrible. So there was no chance that was happening. Printmaking, I really enjoyed printmaking. But, you know, I left thinking I'm going to be a painter. I want to be a painting teacher. That's what I'm focusing on. But in the back of my mind, I knew that I really did better work on paper.
Hmm.
but I wasn't really ready to let it go.
And was there anybody at school that was doing that, or was that not really happening around you?
It was a little bit, but the collage piece was not really happening that much.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't happening that much. But I really was like, no, I'm going to be a painter, and I like to collect this stuff and cut it up and move it around on paper. But that's not the art part. The painting is the art part. So I really tried to push it for a long time. And then one day I realized I'm not as invested in it as I am in my drawing. And it doesn't translate as well.
Huh.
And I sort of had to put it aside.
And was that still in school?
Nope, that was post-school. So I had this huge gap between schools. So I went undergrad, and then it took me 9 years to get into grad school. I don't know if anybody else had the same experience, but it was just 8 straight years of rejections.
Oh my
gosh. Which is totally fine. At the time, I was like, what is the universe trying to tell me? But I really was motivated. And I knew from college and where I went to college, you really had to be a self-motivator. There were not a lot of rules. So I was like, I have to keep pushing this if I want to do this.
Wow.
So every year I would apply. And on the 9th year, I got into School of Visual Arts in New York.
Oh, my word.
I know. And then I was like, okay, all right, now I'm going to move to New York. But at that point, I had pretty much let the painting go and was really working on paper and doing these kind of big, clunky painting drawings, like painting acrylic on paper and then putting the collage pieces in it. And they were sort of little object creatures in a way. They were very abstract and very clunky. And so that's what I was doing when I got there. And that didn't go very well at all.
Did you keep going with that when you got there?
Yeah, I did. I kept going with it. But it was sort of strangely received. I don't know what I was expecting when I went to grad school. I guess it wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be.
Do you think you had it built up in your mind because you'd been trying for so many years to get in?
Oh, totally.
Like, did you think it would be the answer to everything?
Absolutely. I thought, this is it. Not only did I get into grad school, but I got into grad school in New York. I'm going to have this studio in Chelsea, and everything's going to be great. And this is the answer. This is the answer that I've been waiting for all this time. You know, after years of like working odd jobs and making these weird painting drawings at night and not really knowing what to do with them. So I thought, this is it. And it actually wasn't like that at all. I got there, and basically the vibe from my teachers was that this use of this collage material and old photos was really overly sentimental and emotional, and that it didn't really make sense to them, and they didn't really think that it worked.
Ooh.
Ooh, so harsh. I know. But, you know, that's grad school.
Yeah. How did you handle that? Like, were you open to that?
Yeah, I was open to it. I just kept doing it.
Yeah.
I just kept doing it. And then I had sort of a lot of things happen in my personal life that sort of brought me into a much darker place. And I started making all these drawings of charcoal drawings on paper, in addition to doing the paper ephemera pieces. And they were sort of these big, dark, looming landscapes, abstract landscapes, like those clunky objects that I was making before were in a big landscape. And they seemed to like those a little bit better, but overall they kind of were like, yeah, we don't really understand what you're doing. They basically told me that I was too sentimental. That was the basic vibe.
Well, what were you supposed to be?
I don't know. I mean, they seemed to really like, you know, people who were making like the big gestural paintings. And then there was sort of the rebirth of figurative paintings at that time.
Yeah.
So people were making these sort of like oddball figurative works, and people were just freaking out over them. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, to give you an example, this is the weirdest comment I've ever gotten in my 43 years. So I did a show where I told one story of my family that was, I thought, very relatable to people. And I did it using paper, ephemera, collage, ink, paint, and fabric, all different kinds of materials, even more than I use now. And it was a long collage that sort of went around a couple of walls. So you sort of read it as a story, but it was very abstract. But it had photos in it, and I thought it was pretty okay.
You know, yeah, it sounds cool.
It was cool. And so we brought the crit group in.
Oh, no.
And this one guy raised his hand. I didn't even know how to respond. He said, nobody said like, oh, that's interesting, or I like this part. Nobody said anything at all. And this guy said, wow, you know, wouldn't it be weird if you'd like just made this whole story up to just mess with people? And I was like, yeah, I guess. Sure, it would be weird, but that's not really what's happening here.
Oh God.
Yeah, I was like, oh boy, this is gonna be a long 30 minutes because I don't really know what else I'm gonna say after that.
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, okay, time for school to come to an end.
Was that near the end?
Yeah, it was sort of near the end.
Yeah.
And you know, It didn't totally break my spirit, obviously, on using the paper ephemera and collage materials, but I was pretty beaten down when I left.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, well, now I was supposed to like get this like great gallery and maybe like teaching job and all this stuff. It was all going to work out. And, you know, then I was done with grad school and I was double in debt that I was before. And I was kind of right back at square one. So I have all this new artwork that I've done. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to go forward. And it just, I don't know. I don't know why. I think it's because I had built it up for so long that I thought that that was the answer, but that wasn't, I guess, the answer that I needed to find. So,
And so did you stay in New York, or what did you do?
I did for a year afterwards, and then I moved back to Boston, which is where I had been living before. And that was sort of, I think I would say, the crisis part of my artistic journey, because I was like, wait a second. Now I've been doing this for, you know, 12, 13 years out of college. You know, now I've gone to grad school. Now I owe all this money. I have no plan. I have all this artwork. I want to make collages. I have no, and you know, it was a little bit different. So this is 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. Like the social media piece wasn't a part of all of this yet. So, you know, it's not like, you know, weren't using Instagram and all that kind of stuff the way we do now. How am I going to do this? And I thought, okay, well, the first thing that I have to do is that I have to make some money.
Yeah.
I have to make money. And so I just took a job, any job that I could find. And I got a job in an office, which is actually where I still work now. And that challenged me as an artist in a completely different way, because I was suddenly in this more corporate setting. And, you know, my artist friends were like, how can you go and work there? Because it's a corporation, they're evil and bad. And I was like, okay. And then I'd get to work and people were like, just kind of assumed because I was an artist that I would be flakier than I am. I think, like, I think they were really surprised that I was there every day on time and like did all my work and was really motivated. And I felt like they didn't really, you know, that feeling like when you sense like people have already made up their mind about you, maybe because you're an artist. And that's sort of how I felt when I first got there. And so then I was like, now what am I going to do? So I just thought, you know what? I just have to get up every day. I have to go to work. I have to make some money. I have to pay these bills, keep myself safe. And then I need to spend 2 or 3 hours a day working on my art. And that's what I did.
Wow.
And at that time, I mean, I wasn't really have too many shows or anything like that. But the great thing about where I work is that I met my husband, and I ended up moving to Providence, which is about an hour from Boston. And I live there now. And all of a sudden, I found myself in this amazing artistic community at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. And things sort of blossomed when I got here.
How so? Like, did you just find your people, or how did that?
Providence is really small. We have Rhode Island School of Design here, so it's very art focused. We have a lot of galleries, a pretty thriving art scene, and it's small. So, you know, you go to a couple of openings, you see all the same people. you start to chat with them. The social media piece started to come in. We find each other online. And then I started to meet curators and gallery owners and people who want to do shows in alternative spaces. And we started to become friends. And that's sort of how it kind of all came together. And I sort of found my place. And I was like, you know what? This is what I'm focusing on. And I'm not going to worry about what's happening in New York or Boston or anywhere else or at work. I'm just going to focus on making my place here. Mm-hmm. And pretty well.
That is awesome. Because, you know, there is always that. Yeah, I say that too because I live in this little town, you know, and people are like, yeah, but New York and this and that. And it's yeah. like, well, that is the great thing, again, about social media is you don't need to be in those hubs to make things happen. And if you're somewhere where you feel supported and comfortable and free to do what you want to do, that that's when the magic happens.
Yeah. And I think it was like a great melding of things coming together. I had a little bit more confidence in my work. I was a little bit more financially stable. You know, I had this new place to live. I had met my husband, and then I felt like I was open to meeting these new people and trying new things. And I was very like, people would tell me about Facebook and I was like, ugh, no, I don't want anything to do with that. Or, I don't know what happened. I got on Instagram and I started working at it and it just sort of took off.
Mm-hmm. How did we find each other? Was
How
it through?
Did we find each other?
Yeah. Was it through Providence?
You,
people?
No, you actually were one of the first people who ever put me on a blog.
Oh.
And that was your blog in 2011.
Wow. I wonder how I came across you. I wonder if it was on social media.
I don't remember. I don't know. I just remember I was doing that embarrassing thing where I Googled myself to see what was going on, see if anything was cooking. And all of a sudden I saw Jenny Brown, Jealous Curator, and I had heard of your site and been there before. And I was like, oh my God, wait, is that me? Is that me? I went on there, was like, oh my God, I was running around my office going, look, look, everybody, look.
Oh my gosh.
And
that's
it was great.
Funny.
So that's so how funny. I originally met you. But then I think, and then a couple years ago, me and Jess Brilli had done that show in Cambridge, Jealously Curated together.
Yes, that was so cool. I wish so much I could have flown out for that.
Yeah.
How many of so the premise of that was, it was how many people? Like 7 or 8? No.
Yeah. Maybe
even
more? I think it was 8, maybe 10.
Yeah.
I think we ended up with 10. Yep.
Yeah, that had been featured, that were from the East Coast, that had been featured on my blog. And you guys pulled together this, and I mean, I was like, obviously, I love everybody because you're all on my site. And I was just like, oh my God, I just love everybody in this show. And I was so badly wished I could have flown out for that.
And it was a great show. And it was great to meet the other artists. And I had seen Jess's work and we knew each other on social media. But now, you know, now we know each other in person.
Oh, that's great.
And she's great. I love her work. And we had a good time and it was good. It was interesting to sort of work on a show from the other perspective of trying to find artists. And I remember we would send out, you know, we would tell people about the show and we'd email them and we'd say, would you like to be a part of it? And some people were like, no, thanks. And we were so offended.
I know.
And I was thinking, wow, this is what it's like, you know, if you do this all the time. I just assumed everyone would be like, oh, great. Like, I really want to be in the show. And people were like, I'm too busy or I don't think so. And we were at first a little hurt.
I know it's hard. You have to kind of put that aside. I'm planning two big shows right now. And I'm always nervous when I send out those first emails to invite people because you just don't know if A, they're going to write you back. B, if they're going to just be, you know, say no. And you feel a tiny bit rejected. And, you know, you hope for that. Oh, my gosh, of course. Yes. So it's always I always have a little Excel spreadsheet going of the yes column, the no column,
the
I never heard back column.
Yeah. So I feel like that was a really great learning experience because I had never done that before and we met great people. So
yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And that's such a good crew of people too. And so, okay. I want to know then, how did you go from your clunky collage creatures to your elegant jellyfish, alien, tentacly
people,
beautiful things.
Thank you. So, yeah. So I think that the idea of like the creature was there before. And then when I had this sort of transitional time in grad school, and I spent 6 months just doing these again and again, these really dark, heavy charcoal landscapes, they sort of looked like underwater or underground or in a cave. And there was very little light in them. And I mean, it sounds totally cliched, but I mean, it was really a pretty good glimpse into how I felt.
Yeah. Had you gone through a bad breakup or something? Is that?
I had. And then that was like just the start of it. And it sort of tumbled out of control. Many different things and aspects of my life sort of all fell apart at once. And this was sort of the time that I thought, you know, was supposed to be the best time. You know, I'm living in New York and I have this studio and it's going to be great. And it just didn't work out at all.
Yeah.
And so I got really focused on making, after, you know, all the ridiculous comments about the collages, I started making these charcoal drawings, and they're really, really dense landscapes. And very little light coming in. There's just sort of little like keyholes or peek holes, and you could sort of see the shapes that made up the landscape. And as time passed and I started to work on myself a little bit and better my life, I sort of, the black, deep landscapes became smaller and smaller. And I started thinking about all these amazing things were around me in New York, friends, and I just couldn't see it because I was so depressed. You know, like I felt like I had wasted all this money. Everybody was laughing at my artwork. You know, I had no relationship. I had really nowhere to live. You know, I'm running from place to place. And that's how I felt, that I was in this dark tunnel. But those little bits of light were showing me that there were these amazing things and amazing people that I missed out on the chance to see and meet and get to know. And they were always there with me. So, I mean, it seems like kind of a corny metaphor, but I think it's actually true. Like these objects that I've created now were existing in that dark time. And I spent all that time on my art at grad school working on these collages, and then I just kind of like chucked them for a while. And I had this transitional time, and I think it gave me the courage and the time to develop this new, to focus on these, really give these weird sort of objects the attention they deserved, because they had been there all along. I just couldn't really see them. And as I started to pull away from the darkness, and I just became really a lot more interested in color and how it worked together. And I thought about those tunnels that I had made sort of like being at the bottom of the ocean. I know this probably sounds totally nuts to everybody. Being at the at the bottom.
No, it doesn't at all.
Those dark, dark places in the sky that, you know, you just look and you just see forever and you don't know what it is. And how do we know that there isn't all this amazingness in there? We just don't have the capacity to see it. So those are those objects. I'm making them now. So
that's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. So that's what I think of when I make these things. So,
well, and I love that you didn't abandon the stuff that you've loved since you were little, like the ephemera and, you know, all the found textures and fabrics and those photos that you were finding about a year ago. Was that?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I keep collecting them, and it's more, you know what? It's who I am. Yeah. I really wanted to be a painter. I thought that I could pull it off and I would have this cool lifestyle as like an abstract expressionist type painter. And that was never going to happen because it wasn't me. And I think that when I finally made that commitment and I got through that sort of dark space to committing that this is what I really love, my work got 100 times better.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't made that commitment when I was in grad school. I was too wrapped up in my what everybody thought and what I was going to do. And before that, I just didn't have the experience and I didn't have the confidence. And
yeah.
Well, now I think I got that. So,
You know, and it's so funny because I had a very similar experience. I used to love using like found papers and things, and it was just considered crafty and cute. And like, we're the same age, you and I, so we were probably at art school at the same time. And it was just considered silly. You know, I had people telling me that I was giving women in art a bad name by embracing craft and
Wow.
That I was like basically throwing feminism on the fires of mankind. And I was just like, what? I just wanted to use this paper. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so I got crafty a lot too.
Yeah. And I like in sewing. So I abandoned it for years and years. And it was so funny because I was a painting major, but I'd be doing work that had literally no paint on it. Right. They were collages on canvas, and I still refer to them as paintings. And then I was dating my husband, and he said, I said something about, oh, I'm going to work on these paintings. And I think he might have said, oh, but there's no paint on, like, why do you call them paintings? And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I never even realized. So I'm not a painter. But that was a really hard thing to get over because my diploma says painting major.
Painting. Right.
So if I wasn't a painter, I wasn't a real artist or something.
Right. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. I got a lot of that as well.
Yeah. I know. That's why I really identified with your story because I was like, had I gone to grad school, I'm sure I would have gone through the exact same thing as you. I just ran in the other direction and went to design school instead.
Yeah.
And then I fit in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I love that you've gone back to it now. So do you remember when you did the first sort of floaty creature that wasn't in the dark? Do you remember doing it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you think you were a genius when you did it? Like, did you feel like you'd lost 100 pounds off your shoulders when you first did that, or that it was an aha moment?
That's exactly how I felt. Yeah. I felt like I had lost 100 pounds of carrying around because I was like, it made sense.
Yeah.
In its weird kind of quirky way. It made sense. And I didn't feel like I was trying to be like anybody else or trying to fit in what people thought I should be doing or any of the comments that people had given me before. I was just doing my own thing. And, you know, I just was like, you know what? I'm making these for me.
Was this after you'd moved to Providence?
Yes. Huh, yep. I started to make them. I still was doing landscapey-ish. Smaller little drawings. I had been the charcoal drawings I did were huge. That's the other thing I didn't mention. One of them was 8 feet long.
Oh my gosh.
I don't
know.
I mean, I was really like in some sort of place. I don't know. These were obviously much smaller. And then I started to really go back to focusing on the clunky object rather than everything being spread out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got more focused and more focused. And then that's how it was spurned from there.
It's so funny, you know, this moment in your life when you thought everything was going to be perfect and it was the opposite. And then you end up in a place you never, ever imagined you'd be.
Right.
And everything
clicked.
I've never
been here before. Right. I didn't really know anything about Rhode Island. You know, obviously I didn't think that I would go to my temp job and stay there and meet my husband. I know all these sort of things came together. It was the exact opposite. Right.
Yeah. And I love that.
And so then I sort of was in a more peaceful place where I allowed myself to do it. And then when I know it's all these things, and I feel bad because I feel like I'm being cliched and saying it, but when I gave up on trying to be like, well, where would this fit or who would show this or what show would it go in? When I stopped thinking that way, it also got much better because I was like, this is what I enjoy.
Yeah. That is literally the key. And it's so hard. And I don't know if it comes with age or if it, you know, I mean, it must, it's just experience and age and whatever, but God, I wish I could have figured that out in my 20s, but you know.
I know. So much time.
So much time.
So much money. All these moves that I did, but I would never want to go back, you know.
No, it's your story. It's what's led you to where you are. But yeah, it is that I just don't care anymore. I just need to make the things that make me happy and not worry what's going to sell and what galleries are taking on. And I mean, I've said this 1,000 times on this podcast, but it's like when you were a kid and you just made to make.
Yep.
You didn't care.
Made to make.
Yeah, no 6-year-old is like right. hoping to get into a gallery or have a book published. Like, they're just writing stories because they want to, and they're just gluing noodles onto stuff because they want to, and the noodles happen to be there, you know. And
it's so freeing when you get to that place. It's so amazing.
Yeah,
it's so great.
It's like this big loop. Like, you have to go through this thing in your 20s and question everything. Well, you know, it is interesting because I've heard people say that about grad school, is that it pushes you so hard out of the things that you're comfortable with and you're used to. And the fact that you were doing like 8-foot black charcoal drawings, you know, obviously. And I mean, in a way, that's kind of good because like Sydney Pink, I had him on here a while ago, and he does these really great drawings. And so one of the first things he did in his grad, when he did grad school, was a huge oil painting. A really detailed oil painting. And he was like, it was the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I just felt like I had never even tried that. Like, what if that's my thing, you know? And he said, I was so comfortable with my drawings and I was known for them and I'd been showing them. And he's like, I just needed to know that they were the right thing.
And there wasn't something else out there that he was missing out on.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, by pushing yourself through all of that junk, you know, you kind of came back to like, you know what? I love these creatures and I love found paper and I love found images. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it is. It's like a big loop.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you're on this side of the loop. I wanted to ask you about, this is a collage artist question. Sometimes I get a little, this is becomes all about me. So, because you know I do collage, I only ever collage on white paper though. And you have so many beautiful colored backgrounds. Again, which is why it's hilarious to find out you were doing black charcoal drawings.
I know.
Because you clearly love color. What kind of paper is that? Because it looks thick and beautiful, but it's colored.
So I tend to use a lot of cardstock just because I know, you know, from the glue situation, you can get the buckling. So I do cardstock. And then if I'm using a found background, you know, used paper, I usually use the end pages that are a little thicker, the beginning and the end of the book.
Yeah.
Sometimes I use book covers as well, but not as much. But yeah, I tend to have to do, if I'm going to do one of my collages that has a ton of stuff on it, it needs to be at least cardstock. Yeah. I mean, I have done the sort of artboard, papery board as well, but I like it a little bit less.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
I'm just doing a piece right now, a really, really big one on like an illustration board.
Yeah.
Mainly because my mom had a bunch of leftover illustration board and said, do you want it? And I said, okay.
How is that going?
Well, it's great because it doesn't buckle at all. It's so thick.
And it's always depressing when you make something that you really like and then you look down and you realize that it's buckling.
Yeah. Unless you're Anthony Zanonos and you don't care that it buckles.
Right.
God love them. So I'm liking it so far. So I don't know. But I always do white backgrounds. And so, but I love how colorful your work is. So I just wanted to see what that was. So good to know. Yeah, I have a whole bunch of end pages ripped out that are all different colors.
Yeah. But, and they tend to be a little bit thicker
for
the beginning of that. So try that.
Okay.
See how that works.
All right. I've always been, they're just sitting there in a pile. I don't know why I've never done anything with them. Thank you, Jenny.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is going on now? You still have your job, right?
I do. I still have my job. So I'm still, you know, doing my day job. I usually work a couple hours every night on my art-related stuff, and then I usually devote my whole weekends to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think as time is passing, I'm in a much better place than I was even a year ago in terms of doing events and pop-ups and having galleries to work with. So I think slowly things are starting to come along where I have more income, you know, coming in from my art. I know that this probably happens. Well, I'm assuming it happens to a lot of people. You have these huge gaps where nothing happens. And then it's like everything happens in like 3 weeks or a month. And you sell like all this stuff and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to quit my job. And then all of a sudden nothing happens. You don't sell anything. The person changes their mind. Nobody orders any prints.
Yeah. So, oh, the lull. Yeah, the waves of an artist. Yeah.
It's very, And you know, the waves are a little bit, the lulls have been a little bit less as of late, which is good. So I think, you know, as time goes on, I'll be able to sort of piece more of, you know, my day being focused on art, which is great.
Is the dream to be a full-time artist, or do you kind of like having the balance?
For right now, it actually having the balance is good, I think, because it takes me out of just being in front of my work, and, you know, it just, you know, you use your brain differently, and, you know, financially, it keeps me being able to make my art exactly how I want it and be able to apply it to as many shows as I want. You know, we all know how this starts to add up after a while, and, you know, get the materials that I want, buy the weird postcard that's, you know, kind of expensive, and I'm going to cut it up and see if it's going to work, that I might not have done before. So in that, you know, it fuels my art, and I'm very appreciative of it. And, you know, I have to pay back my student loans from this crazy journey that I've been on of school.
Yeah.
But I hope one day that, you know, I would be able to have my life be about making my work, doing some teaching. I've done a little bit of teaching in the past, and have that be the primary focus.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the dream.
Yeah.
And to do a show where I install all my little creatures on all the walls, all over the place.
Mm. Oh, my God, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. That would be a good dream.
You should paint the background wall like navy blue so that it's like you're in the ocean.
Yeah, like a nice dark color.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that would be another dream too.
Oh, that's good dream. I like that. Ooh, I can see it already. Uh-oh, I'm starting to plan another show. You know what they remind me of is that my son was obsessed with like The Abyss and like The Trench and the deep, deep, deep water. We have all these books from when he was little about The Abyss and all the creatures that live down there. And, you know, there's all the weird jellyfish that like light up.
Oh, the bioluminescent ones.
Yeah, and they've got like little rainbow things, and they look like carnival rides or something.
I know.
And that's what your work reminds me of. Yeah, totally. Like it either looks like a UFO or, yeah, a carnival ride. And that's what your work totally reminds me of.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Is that good as I'm saying that?
Yeah,
like,
it's great. I do. I love it. I love those things.
Okay, well, that show would be amazing. How many, like, stashed away in your studio? How many of those creatures do you have?
I have some out on loan right now. Probably have about 20 out there in the world.
Yeah.
And then I probably have about 50 more right now.
I wonder how many you'd need. I guess it depends on how big that space is.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the space. I once, because I work in my home as well, I once decided to try to see how many drawings it would take to cover my living room wall.
Yeah.
And it's way more than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It's like 75.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Just for one wall. Yeah, wall. You would have to probably have a couple hundred.
Oh, that would be so cool.
I know. It would be really cool. It would be really cool. Like a sort of a room of bioluminescence.
Yes.
Would be awesome.
Okay. It's in the universe now.
Yeah.
Floating around us.
It is.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Well, now that that's in the universe, not so speedy speed round.
Oh.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Favorite shade of lipstick?
Oh, red.
You always have the best lipstick in every single photo I've ever seen of you.
Thank you.
Can I ask you, is it lip stain that you do? Like, how does it stay that red and on you?
It's not lip stain. It's regular lipstick.
That would be wiped off of me in like 5 minutes.
Well, the problem with red lipstick is that you've got to put it, you have to keep reapplying it.
Okay, I guess I could try that.
And like, if you do things like I do, like accidentally, like, you know, you go to drink something and you miss your mouth totally and you hit the side of it. And it smears, and then it, like, the red mark just, you can never really get it to go away.
Yes.
So it's the only problem with red lipsticks is a lot of maintenance.
Okay, well, I could put in a little more effort. Okay, I just wanted to know if there was like some miraculous secret or something. Okay, favorite movie? Oh, because we're the exact same age. Favorite movie from your high school years?
From my high school years?
Yeah.
The movie that I watched the most in high school was The Philadelphia Story.
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
It is a movie with Katherine Hepburn and Cary Grant.
Oh.
And Jimmy Stewart about this Philadelphia socialite. I actually lived outside Philadelphia in when I was in high school. So that's somebody's like, oh, you have to watch this old movie about, you know, living in the suburbs. And it's kind of silly and ridiculous, but also amazing because Katharine Hepburn is amazing.
Yes.
And I was totally, totally obsessed with it.
Okay. I did not even know. I was expecting 16 Candles or something. Okay. I'm going to look that up. Well, we kind of covered this, but maybe what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self? Little Jenny at art school.
I guess it would be sort of this whole loop that we've been on, that you probably already know what you want to really do.
Yeah.
And if you can, you should try to listen to that sooner rather than later.
Yes. If that's possible. Yeah.
Because I didn't. I tried and then I pushed it away. But, you know, I think everybody goes through that. But yeah, the sooner that you can just accept that, because looking back, like I already did know. I already knew.
Yeah. But you probably knew since you were a kid and you were like going through all of your grandma's stuff.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You're not ready.
Love it. Okay. Final one. Would you rather go up in a hot air balloon or in a submarine? You have flying issues, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely go in a submarine for sure. 100%.
Would you be freaked out down there too, but you would just rather do that than go in the air?
Yeah, anything that keeps me out of the air would be great. But yeah, and you know, a submarine, maybe you can look out the window, maybe there'll be some creatures, but yeah, I'd be a little freaked out, but I'll take that.
Over being in the air.
Absolutely.
I remember seeing that on Facebook. You were going to visit your brand new baby nephew or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I just like, I'm going to lose it, but we did it.
Yeah. And your lipstick looked fabulous in that shot on the plane. See, so it's all good.
It's all good.
Yeah. Okay. I just had to ask that. And yeah, who knows what you'd see under there in a submarine. I don't know if I could go in a submarine. I think I would feel super claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It definitely would be scary no matter what.
But hot air balloon. I don't know about that either. My dad went up in a hot air balloon when I was little. I think I was probably, I don't know, I have weird memories of it. So I was probably 4 or 5. And it was this thing in our town and it was this thing at the park. And he was going to go up in this hot air balloon. And I think it was still even anchored to the ground, but he was going to go up in it. And I can just remember losing my mind crying because I thought he was going to die.
Oh, like it wasn't going to come back.
Yeah, or something. Like I just was like, please, daddy, please. And, you know, he was like, it's fine, you know, and he's just thinking that I'm a 4-year-old having a tantrum.
Right.
I can remember being like,
it's burned on your brain.
Yeah. And I've never been in one. And so, maybe I need to get over that. But I just have this very clear memory of like, my daddy's going to float away or it's going to crash. Or maybe my little brain didn't understand how a balloon was going to stay in the air like that.
Yeah, it is a pretty incredible thing.
It is. Anyway, now people can leave comments and say, no, it's fantastic. You should try it.
It seems really scary.
I know.
I can't even. The thought of leaning over the side.
Okay, I know. It makes my toes tingle. It makes my toes tingle.
I know. And me too. Me too.
Okay, those are all of my questions. Did that seem like it went really fast?
It went really, really fast, but it was so great.
That was, I read the thing on Facebook because, and I really want, this is so important because I think this is the story of so many people, and especially with social media, nobody wants to admit to, oh God, this thing I thought was going to be perfect is literally the opposite thing from perfect.
Perfect. Right. And it didn't just all sort of gel the way that one thinks it's going to. You don't just go from school. Well, I mean, maybe there are some people. You don't go from school to gallery, to teaching job, to gallery, to, you know.
You know, and if there are people that do that and then you think, oh God, I'm the only one that isn't doing that. You know, it's really nice to know that like, no, there's everybody has their own story. Everybody has their own path. Yeah. And as soon as, you know, one thing I've learned through Jealous Curator and like talking to so many people and is that thing of just trying not to be what everybody else wants you to be or what you think is going to sell or as soon as you just sort of embrace who you really are, like You know, Greg, my husband, said that to me about the blog when I said, oh, what's the point in starting an art blog? There's a zillion of them out there. And he said, you know, the only difference between you and every other art blog out there is you. And right. So he said, you know, this has to have your voice and your taste and just own it. Like, don't try and sound like anybody else. And I was like,
And it doesn't. It's amazing. It's so distinct and very much your own.
Well, thank you. But, you know, it is because of really him saying that. And I was like, okay. You know, and I was older too. I was in my mid-30s. And I was like, yeah, right. I know who I am. And I am going to just own it. Granted, I also didn't think anybody was reading. Nobody was reading it for the first little while. So I had this time to kind of play around. And actually saying that out loud, that's the same with your art, right? Like, nobody yeah. sees it for the first little while. So take the time yeah. and figure out who you are and what you want to be making and what brings you joy in the studio as opposed to feeling like
right, because
work.
Because
it'll
never really work.
No.
It will never really work. There will always be something off about it. And yeah. you yourself will know that there's something off about it.
Yeah, it's like a square peg round hole, right? And you
yeah.
can feel it, but you just keep jamming it in there because you feel
exactly.
like you're supposed to. And then as soon as you stop that, you get round peg round hole and you're like, there we go. And that's when the 100 pounds comes off your shoulders and you're off to the races.
It's such a great moment.
Yeah.
Such a
well,
great
thank
moment.
You so much for coming on and sharing all of that and being so honest and hard on sleeve. And I think there's probably zillions of people listening right now who are nodding and just being like, oh, thank God I'm not the only one.
So thank you for having me.
Of course.
I really appreciate it. It's great.
Yeah. And now
really
I have an excuse
to
post all of your critters again.
Yay.
And really, I would love to figure out how to do that show, but that means you've got to make a lot more guys.
I'm totally up for it.
That'd
I'm
be
up
so
for it.
Cool. Okay.
It
I'm,
would be cool.
I'm going to try and we'll talk. We'll see if we can figure something out.
Yeah, we need to figure it out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Deal. Okay, well, thanks, Jenny. And this will be up on the weekend. And I will see you online.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Are you still there?
I am.
That was really awesome.
Oh, I don't even know what now. I was so nervous at first, but I couldn't remember what I was saying. But I'm glad you thought it was good.
No, it was great. It was exactly, you know, the Facebook thing. And I thought it was, you know, and actually to even hear you say that, you know, you were a bit nervous to even put it out in the world, that you did put it up on Facebook. And then I was so happy to be able to share it on here because I think it's an important, you know, people need to hear that. I'm sure
yeah.
so many people feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know. Why, you know, people shouldn't be beating themselves up if they, you know, they're not, you know, have a million shows all the time.
Yeah, no, it's unrealistic, you know, and so many artists that I, you know, worship because I figure they've got it made. Like Aaron Smith was just on here the other day. And that's what he said. He said, oh my gosh, there's lulls where like when nothing's happening, you're like, oh, I guess is my career done now?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, here we go again. You know, and then after that high, you're like, oh, now am I done? Nope, here we go again. So it's just, you just have to learn how to ride that wave and be okay with
it. I know.
Yeah.
I know. It does. It is such a weight off your shoulders.
Yeah.
You described it perfectly.
I was going to ask you, Rhode Island, do you know Kirsten Lamb?
I do. She's a good friend of mine.
Oh.
And we actually met on social media. And she and I did a West Elm event a couple months ago
oh.
together here in Providence. And then I ended up going and visiting her studio.
Oh,
and she was telling me about being on the podcast. And she's like, well, maybe one day you'll do it. I was thinking, oh, wow, I don't know. But and so when you asked me about it, I texted her and I said, guess what? She was like, yes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
She's great. I love her
so
work.
Great.
She's so fun. And yeah, I can just talk to her for hours and
yeah.
hours.
Well, I know we were chatting about, you know, if there's some way that I can come out to Rhode Island to do something like at RISD or some, you know, something.
It would be great.
It would be so great because there's so many of you guys out there.
It's such a cool place.
Yeah,
there's so much going on here, and people are really interested in keeping the art community thriving here. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got to get
great,
myself
like,
there.
Yeah, I think you would really enjoy it. We have to find an occasion for you to come here.
Yeah.
Do something.
Deal.
Perfect.
Yeah, I really want to. And it seems like it keeps floating around. Like people keep mentioning it and then it just nothing ever
yeah.
like materializes. So we'll put that in the universe too and
yes,
see what we can do.
Yeah. Because it would be great.
Yeah.
I think you would really enjoy it. And there's just there's so much art. There'd be so many people, great people for you to meet.
Yeah, it would be fun. Okay, it's all out there now.
It is.
Alrighty. Well, I'll let you go. It's late there, and yeah, I'll probably see you on Facebook in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, I will talk to you soon.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, maybe life not turning out exactly how you thought it should is actually a good thing. Granted, sometimes it takes getting to the other side of that full circle to realize it. I love the advice Jenny had for her 20-year-old self, and I think it's great advice for all of us, no matter how far away we are from 20. Anyway, thank you so much to Jenny for being so open and sharing her story with such generosity. The only thing I regret not asking her was about her love of donuts. Seriously, so many amazing donuts on her Instagram feed. I may have even included a few of them at the end of my post about Jenny's work over on my site, thejealouscurator.com. Let's just say there's a unicorn donut. That's right. Okay, thank you so much to Saatchi Art for supporting yet another episode. And as always, thank you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.